Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend, or we're about to visit, I should say, when I get her in here. Our good friend Joan Price, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Hey, Joan, come on in.
Okay, Jim, I think I will. Thank you.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Great. It's good to have you back.
Good. Thank you.
Before we get into the letter, it's not breaking news, but the news this week is the Democrats have a VEEP.
They sure do.
Tell us about it.
His name is John Edwards, senator from, I always forget if it's North or South Carolina.
Yeah, it's North
Carolina.
What my problem
is. He
was born in South Carolina.
I think that's what the problem is.
He was born in South Carolina.
So it's sort of both.
But apparently they ran him off, and so now he has to go live in North Carolina. And,
there you go.
And so, and so he's a senator from, and apparently a one-term senator. I found out something yesterday I didn't know.
What?
I didn't know he wasn't running for re-election.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Did you know that?
That's right.
That's been information that hasn't been talked about much, because I read a lot of stuff and I did not know that.
Well, and that was a big concern of the Democrats, because his choice not to run worried them at the time, needing as many Democrats to run again as possible, because they didn't want yet another open seat to have to fight for to try to get closer to the majority in the Senate.
Is Erskine Bowles going to run go for that seat again?
Well, I thought he was running. Yeah, he is running.
Didn't he run against
Liddy Dole?
Dole? Yeah, yes. Ms. Dole, and now he's running for that seat. But as a Democrat, but so apparently, Mr. Edwards, I really was surprised to hear that. But anyway, Kerry has tapped Edwards, and Joan, I know I did, and it seems to me like you agreed with we agreed with each other one of the few times. 6 months ago, or four months ago, when it became obvious that Kerry was going to be the presumptive nominee, that it was going to be Edwards as the VP.
Yeah, didn't I don't know you? Why it took so long to figure this out, because we knew it.
You and I knew this 4 months ago, didn't we?
Right.
And so
they should have asked us.
Well, you know,
they could have saved a lot of angst.
They often do. I think I was just out of town when they called that time, but.
But Jim, don't you think that this is all, and the Republicans do it too, I'm not saying they're any better, but I think this was all designed to keep up suspense and get more, I guess, media time and publicity out of this selection.
Well, they needed to get Bill Clinton off the stage. That's one of the reasons that they did it now.
And they actually did a great job of confusing the media and keeping it under wraps until the very last minute. And you may have heard about the story that came out, the New York Post scooped
everyone. I saw that.
And threw it on their front page. The only problem was they were wrong.
Right. It was sort of like Dooley wins.
It was Dewey beats Truman, right?
Dewey beats Truman, yeah.
This was Gephardt is the VEEP.
And then their next day's headline, New York Post said Gephardt is new VP. The next day said, it said Edwards is the VP, and then below it said, really?
Really? We mean it this time.
But you know, there were two schools of thought, it seems, in the Democrat Party about when to announce. One school thought that he should wait till the convention to get some extra bounce out of the convention, and the other said, you know, hey, Mr. Kerry, you need some help here. You need to go ahead and announce right away.
Well, you're going to get bounce at the convention anyway, just because it's on. I think it's better to get pre-convention bounce. And I also think he was probably closing in on a decision anyway, and to try to keep that secret between now and the convention, I think would have been impossible. It would have leaked out.
Well, and so, Joan, what you're saying is the press has had two bad weeks. They got blindsided because the handover in Iraq last week didn't go as they had planned. And this week they got blindsided by Kerry, because he didn't leak who the VP was.
Well, I mean, you can call it
blindsided. Is that the reason they're so grumpy this week?
Well, and you know how you could have figured this out, and they knew that this was the way to do it, was to infiltrate the guys who were actually printing the Kerry Edwards campaign literature.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's you know, the thing about it is that even the Kerry really did a good job of this, because they weren't even together when he made the announcement. I mean, they made sure those guys were in different cities the whole time.
Well, that's what threw everybody off. The people were watching Gephardt, Edwards, and the others to see which one would go to Kerry, figuring that would be the one.
If only they would listen to Jim and Joan. You know, it's just, we gave them the headline 4 months ago, Joan.
I know.
What's the problem?
I can't tell you.
I don't know either. Hey, Joan, let's move over and talk in the letter and talk about...
The letter? You want to talk about the letter?
Yeah, let's talk about that letter thing. Okay, well, I'll tell you what. Let me ask you one more question about Mr. Edwards. What do you think he's going to do for the ticket?
Oh, Edwards?
Yep, that guy.
Well, I'm thinking possibly some southern states are in play, but, you know, I really don't think any vice presidential candidate adds a lot to a ticket.
That's kind of the research, isn't it?
Pardon me?
So that's kind of been what the research has shown, hasn't it?
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, you get a little bump in publicity, and I don't think you get much more than that. And I don't think he detracts much either because, you know, the big rap against him is his lack of experience. But, you know, if Dan Quayle can be vice president, I think, you know, just about anybody can.
Well, he does have doesn't have a lot of experience.
I would ask you this. Okay. How many elective offices had George W. Bush had before he was governor of Texas?
I agree. I wouldn't argue with that at all. No,
so I think they probably have to be careful about trotting out the inexperienced card.
I agree, and I don't see that as a big deal, but certainly most people agree, Democrats included, that Mr. Kerry needed to have a quick smile to counterbalance his long face. Would you? And
yes.
I don't mean that.
I'm
not saying that in an ad hominem way at all, folks. He's just a little bit doleful, isn't he?
He's a serious guy. Yeah.
He's a little bit doleful, and Mr. Edwards has got a. I mean, and of course, they both have just an outstanding head of hair, and you know,
and Mr. Kerry pointed that out yesterday.
He did. He said we have better
vision, better dreams, better ideas, and better hair than the other ticket.
Good for him. I wonder who wrote that for him.
but the best line was his wife, who later said, "You shouldn't have said that. You just lost the bald vote."
Exactly. Well, now that's right. And you know, Joan, sadly, to some degree, the presidential election is a beauty contest, isn't it?
Sure is.
It certainly can be, and that's unfortunate. And the reason I say that is I've heard people say that, you know, they voted for somebody because he was the best looking candidate.
Well, that's why 2000 was so difficult, because you couldn't really tell which guy was more attractive.
Well, and that's the other reason why I have never run for public office, folks, is because I could not win any kind of beauty contest, as Joan Pride knows very well. 20 after, we'll be right back. After these messages, I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back. Back, it's 23 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, the first line of the letter this week is this: is the U.S. losing its technology edge? What's the story?
Well, you know, it says no. I'm so glad, because you worry that other countries might be creeping up behind us.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly because of outsourcing, we've talked about that a lot. But we're still way ahead, and I think it probably has to do with our research ability.
Well, I had one of our Brain Trust members is a guy named Ed Yordan, who wrote a book 12 years ago called "The Decline and Fall of the U.S. Programmer" or something like that. He predicted in 1992 what is happening right now. And for 10 years, you can imagine the kind of stuff he took for predicting something that hadn't happened yet.
Oh, sure.
Especially during the 90s. So now
he's a visionary.
Now he's looking like a prophet, and he's written another book called Outsource, and it's where he's kind of a sequel to all that, and he points out a lot of the things that you guys do in your letter today this week, and that is, you know, that outsourcing is predictable, that it's a good thing that you've got to back, you got to go up to, you know, to 10,000 feet and look down on it. You can't be in, if you're in the middle of the fray, you know, and you just lost your job to India. Maybe that's not a good thing, but that overall that it's good for a lot of reasons, and But your points here about the different kinds of new technologies that are going to be springing up across the United States, that's very interesting. And nanotechnology is a biggie, isn't it?
That's right. And I know that Kiplinger's written about that before. And I've never quite understood it, but I know that it's going to be big.
Well, here's, you know, you and I have talked about this a little bit, Joan, because
But I've always bluffed my way through the conversation.
Well, nanotechnology, as you know, is billions. Things that are measured in the billions.
Okay.
Billions of a second, billions of an inch or meter or whatever. And these are the things, Joan, as you remember, these are the products. These are little tiny, tiny, tiny computers, maybe like to the ninth power tiny computers that basically go in, that we weave into thread, into shirts, and that we, you know, all that kind of thing. Maybe they put it in the bloodstream. Who knows where it's going to go? Another friend of mine, Dan Burris, says if you get it through your head that a computer doesn't have to have a monitor, you can start thinking about where all the computers are in your life.
Wow!
Isn't that a great way to say it?
Yeah, that's a good way to think of it.
He's one of our Brain Trust members, and he wrote that recently. And I really like that. I like that thought. And his point is there are computers all around you. You just can't look for the monitor and the mouse and the keyboard.
Yeah, and it depends on what your definition of computer is. I think maybe our definition is too narrow the way we think of them.
Exactly. And so when you do that, though, you can start thinking about nanotechnology. You can start realizing this. Now, to me, Joan, here's the only problem. From a macro standpoint, with your good news here, and that is that molecular biology and nanoscience is not mainstream. No, the rank and file American is not going to be saved by, you know, IT person is not going to be saved by these technologies.
But the third leg of this we do say is IT in terms of what we're ahead in.
Right, right. And so that's going to have to be the big umbrella for sure.
Right.
But you guys say that our lead's going to last for years.
Yeah, we do. So you'll have to believe us.
Yeah. Well, and the U.S., the other thing is, and you guys point this out this week, is that the U.S. spends more than anybody else in the world on research and development.
$276 billion two years ago. So it's probably higher than that now.
Mm-hmm.
And a third of that is from the government. That means two-thirds is from private industry.
You know, and I this is just so interesting that I've had these two guys I just mentioned and another guy I'm about to mention. Carl Schramm is the president of the Kauffman Group, and he talks about four sectors that are driving what you're talking about, and one of them is government. He talks in a report that he published recently, he talks about how government contributing to the development, like you're mentioning here, and the technology transfer opportunities from those government investments, how that's really helping to strengthen entrepreneurialism in the United States.
Oh, absolutely.
And you know, Joan, therein lies opportunity for small businesses.
Oh, no question about that.
Believe it or not, because if you folks, if you're around any kind of a university that's doing any kind of research and you're a small business owner, you need to know what they're doing. You need to find out what they're doing. You need to see where what they're creating, what they're inventing, how it can be used as an application in your business or a business that you could create. This is going to be big in the 21st century, Joan, I think, the technology transfer element.
I agree.
And another thing that you guys point out is that American companies are quicker at capitalizing on these R&D gains.
That's right. And as we also point out, that is sort of translated into productivity gains that have confused the Federal Reserve and economists so much over the last several years.
Yeah. Exactly. And so these are all areas, folks. These are bright spots. Now, they're not sexy. They're not the kind that leap off the table at you and say, you know, we're going to, you know, this is going to save your bacon here. But the main thing is is there's a lot of good news in the U.S. economy, in the U.S. marketplace, but it's different news. It's not the old news. And that's where it's tripping up some of us, I think. 29 after, we're going to be right back with Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. The show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
He inspires small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need. There's the challenge.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
We're back. It's 34 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, and I'm glad you're here. Joan Pride is with us. I'm glad she's here, too. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, let's move over to the top of page two and talk about the economy. Kiplinger reports this week that the June slowdown in job growth doesn't signal big trouble, and I agree.
Yeah, when those June numbers came out, it showed that jobs were being created at a much slower pace, and some people made a lot of that, but other people were saying, you know, this could be an anomaly. You really need to wait for next month's numbers to find out if this is a trend. We're saying it's not a trend, that, you know, there's managers out there concerned about the spike in energy prices and, you know, are waiting to see what's going to happen. But since oil prices are going down, they should be hiring again.
Well, exactly, and another thing that weighed in on June numbers, Joan, was the weather. An awful lot. There was a lot of rain in the United States, especially from Texas east. A lot of rain that really hurt construction. See, as you know, you guys had been bragging on construction, the construction industry, how it had really been holding its own and helping to hold up the economy. And when you put that much rain out of the sky, you really take a lick out of construction.
That's right.
And those are many of those guys, Joe. Many construction workers literally work day to day. I mean, they don't even if they work for a company, they may work for one company for a week or two, and another company another week or two. I mean, they can actually move around that much, and so whenever it rains, the boss just says go home.
That's right.
And they go home.
Sure.
You know, another thing that bears out what you guys are talking about is a recent report that we just reported on the last hour with Sam Norwood and with Tatum Partners. And his indicators show exactly what you guys are saying in the letter this week, Joan.
See, we're good.
Yeah. And he was we just reported about how the numbers, May numbers were great. The June numbers, not so good. The July numbers are back up almost like June. So it was just, I mean, like May, it was just June was just kind of a tough month.
With the
alignment of the fuel stars and the weather stars and that sort of thing. And of course, as you know, Joan, the Fed raised rates a little bit, and we talked about that a little bit last week. That doesn't seem to be creating too much concern for folks. I think that was one of the most foretold, I guess I should say, rate increases in history.
Well, and they did that on purpose. You know, they didn't want to frighten the markets or upset them. And I think Mr. Greenspan is very aware of people who have positions in different kinds of securities who may need to unwind them in advance of such a change in monetary policy. So they were very, very careful this time, and it really paid off.
Mm-hmm. Joan, let's move on down and talk about trade. The World Trade Organization ruling on cotton will have a surprising effect. And tell us about how that works.
Well, this is the ruling that we're talking about. It ruled against U.S. subsidies on cotton. And it's going to set a precedent for other types of commodities, and we're saying such as sugar and soybeans. Now, you would think that this would upset the United States and make it more difficult to get a trade agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Not so. We're saying that to keep a lot of other challenges from being made to different countries and different commodities, it will actually force countries to get together and reach an agreement.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Joan, taking the not following this particular issue all that closely, but taking a macro view at China, you know, we free countries, especially the United States, we're going to have to really pick our battles with China. I mean, when you think about it, we need to get rid of that communist regime over there. The world needs to. So, and of course, what's happening, as you know, is democracy is, you know, getting a little foothold. The free market is definitely getting a foothold over there, with,
right.
as rough as it may look right now. But imagine that many people becoming global consumers. That can't be anything but good for American companies.
Absolutely.
And so it's just very interesting. We're going to talk about that a little bit more as we get over to page four. Joe, let's move on down and talk about banks. A lot of bank mergers recently.
Boy, you know, it never seems to stop.
Well, there was one big one, wasn't it? And that was the acquisition of South Trust, or the pending acquisition of South Trust. We're going to talk about that in just a minute, a little bit more, and some other things after these messages. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Joan Pride. It's 20 Till. Back at 17 Till, I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Joan Pride is with us. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and folks, I encourage you to check out their website. It's Kiplinger.com, K-I-P-L-I-N-G-E-R.com. They're about to embark on their 82nd year, just about sometime in September they'll have their 81st birthday, I guess. Yeah, 81st birthday, and I really encourage you to check out their stuff. They've been doing this a long time. They know what they're doing. And they got a website that I mentioned. They've got some publications that I encourage you to check out, which includes the weekly flagship Kiplinger Letter, which was started in 1923, and that one is by, you can get it by email or you can get it by print. And they've got three biweekly letters: the California Letter, the Agriculture Letter, and the Tax Letter. And Joan, tell them about the magazine.
That's right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
What's in that magazine?
Well, it's chock full of stuff. It's not just which stock or mutual fund to buy. It's a lot of other things that have to do with your life and finance, such as working on saving for retirement or your kids' education or anything like that.
Or your own career or
a lot of different things.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of different things in there. And, of course, that's available at newsstands. And they
right.
you can subscribe on the website. They'll give you a 30-day free trial of any of these. That'll be two editions of the biweekly, four editions of the letter, and one of the magazine, and also a phone number. Joan, give us that, please.
The toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
And on the 81st anniversary of Kiplinger in September, Joan, we now know that Mr. Austin Kiplinger, the publisher emeritus, editor emeritus, I guess, who actually signed the letter this week, by the way. And it'll be his 86th birthday.
Wow. Well, your listeners are in for a treat, as they know if they've heard him before.
Yeah. Yeah. He's been on the show before, and he is one cool dude. And
if I were you, I'd just give the whole 2 hours over to him and just let him tell stories.
I'm just going to say,
okay. He tells the best stories.
I'm going to say, you go, boy.
Yep.
Leave him alone. But that'll be fun. That'll be in the third week of September, and Joan's going to set aside and let him take that show that day. Okay, Joan, let's get back and talk about banks. A lot of bank mergers. Remember the conversation that I had about the barbell effect that Mike Menzies taught us about?
Oh, that's right. We've talked about that many times. You know, the squeeze in banking comes as sort of the middle range, where the bigger banks are getting bigger, but small, very small community banks are still thriving. So
right.
It's sort of the middle range bank that's being squeezed out.
Kind of regional banks.
That's been going on for a while now.
And I don't know, I can't say what size those are because I get confused. I know how big a nice little community bank is in terms of assets, but I don't know, I don't know the numbers for the middle size or the big banks, but you're exactly right. This is really getting to be more and more good news for the independent community banks. And folks, as you know, I really encourage you to, I come as close as I can come to demanding that you have at least one independent community bank have a banking relationship with at least one of those guys. And I encourage you every day, now more than ever, to make sure that you do business with an independent community bank.
Well, when I used to cover,
Go ahead.
Well, when I used to cover banking, I can remember I often talked to small business owners who said they would see their mid-sized bank get gobbled up by a big bank and just got sick of the bad service and trotted down the street to their local community bank and became much happier as a result.
Well, and of course, there are a lot of big banks out there that do a good job, but folks, you need to have both elements. You need to have, if you're going to have a big bank, you got to have a little bank, and then you choose for yourself. Joan, let's move over to page 3 in the middle there and talk about health. This is interesting news, and I think this is going to impact on the election too, Joan. And this, you say that as many as a dozen states may cap medical malpractice awards. That's very interesting.
Well, this is interesting. This is another case where, and this has happened so many times on different issues, that Congress drags its feet, can't make a decision, can't act. So the states go ahead and start to act. And that's their right. The only problem is you get this crazy quilt of laws where some states have the law and some states don't. And that's what makes it difficult.
Well, exactly. And, you know, Joan, speaking of the election, Mr. Edwards being so closely tied to the trial lawyers, the plaintiff's bar, he's really going to be bringing out the people who are in favor of medical malpractice and other tort reform, which includes the doctors and the corporations, including my corporation. You know, when I say corporations, I mean not only big companies but small ones too. People who want tort reform, and Mr. Edwards is probably seen as not being in favor of that sort of thing. So
yeah, I would think he is not. That's right.
So this is going to be a real important element of the election, and these states taking this action, Joan. If to the degree that any of those states are swing states, you know what I mean? Pennsylvania's
sure.
in there. Florida's in there. I'm trying to think. I don't think Washington or Oregon are necessarily swing states, but if there are a dozen states, if to the degree that some of them are swing states, that could really play on the election, couldn't it?
That's right.
So that's a very interesting thing. Joan, have you signed up for your space ride?
Well, I'm working on that. Yeah, 30 minutes of a thrill, I guess.
Would you, if I paid for it, Joan, would you take that ride?
No way. Would you?
Absolutely.
You would?
Oh, absolutely. One of my biggest, not regrets.
So wait a minute. You'd pay $150,000 for me to do this?
Yeah, if I did, would you go?
If you did, would I?
Yeah. Yeah.
But you won't.
Well, the chances of me coming up with the 150 is a lot greater than you agreeing to grow. To go.
But if I went out to space and didn't come back, it would be worth it, right?
Well, that I'd pay $250 for that. No. Well, you know, I tell you, Joan, I always wanted to be an astronaut. I would have loved. I am the person I envy more than anybody in the world. Whenever I do envy somebody, is Neil Armstrong.
I didn't know that.
Neil Armstrong is. I mean, that's just too cool. I would love to have been able to do that. And of course, I know some people who would like to blast me into space too. Tintil will be right back. I'm Jim Blassingame. We're visiting with Joan Pride. We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Joan Pride is our guest. My website is www.jbsba.com or jimblassingame.com or smallbusinessadvocate.com. Either one of those will get you to the place where you can find a little bit of entrepreneurial nirvana. And don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter, which is easy to do there on the site. Joan, let's move over and talk about automobiles. But we're also going to weave in some information about China. We're going to continue our little bit of our discussion, as I promised earlier, about China. Higher interest rates, Kiplinger says, won't end generous financing for new cars. I mean, it is officially to the point, Joan, where people believe now that when they buy a car, they're supposed to get a heck of a spiff from the company, don't they?
Well, it's similar to the folks who shop at department stores who always expect to see sales. You know, people buying cars expect to get a deal. So car makers, you know, they just sort of got people used to this, and now they're stuck. As we put it, they will eat the cost of to continue 0% financing, long loans, and hefty rebates.
Yeah, and of course, the gas prices, Joan, have probably cut into their SUV sales, especially
right,
the
larger ones. Right, they have to sort of stimulate demand.
So you know, I'm thinking if gas went any higher, they might be calling you up and saying, look, if you'll come get this thing, we'll give you $5,000.
That's right.
No questions asked. Just come get the truck and the money. You get it off a lot. But one of the things that companies are doing, this is impacting small businesses, Joan, is that they're trying to put the squeeze on suppliers to help them with trim their costs. And when I say put the squeeze, a lot of times these are just literally orders. You know, you will cut your costs by 5%. Otherwise, we're not going to do business with you.
Right, and we're saying that that's going to probably hurt them to the point that some will go out of business.
Well, there's no question about it, and it's happening all the time. Joan, if you remember, about 3 or 4 years ago, you and I reported that the automobile industry was going to be doing, 40% of their business online in 2 years. And they gave that mandate to their suppliers and said, you will be doing this. Now, I actually think that was a good plan because it made everybody get more efficient. But when you start mandating to your suppliers what they will charge you, and just because you have a bad, a tough business model, that's really unfortunate for the people in that industry. And I suspect that some of them are looking around and looking for new things to make.
That's right. Good point.
What about U.S. automakers in China, Joan? You guys say that there's a real growth opportunity over there. What's up with that?
Well, we say the profit outlook is improving, and then that's going to make the big car makers really sink a lot of money into China. The GM says it made an average of $1,100 on each vehicle sold in China, and that's 10 times what they were making on cars in the United States.
And are these are imported, obviously imported cars from somewhere?
Yeah, I believe
else.
They're not made in China, right?
But you're saying that they're going to start investing in physical plant in China?
We say $4 billion just from GM alone by 2007.
Yeah.
They want to really start building there.
1.3 million cars a year, you guys said. And Ford wants to put $1.5 billion into increase production.
Just think of how many cars you could sell over there.
Apparently, Ford is now currently making cars over there because you say that they want to increase production to 150 cars from just 20,000 now.
Yeah, which is like a drop in the bucket now.
Exactly. And Daimler Chrysler wants to do the same thing. Joan, here's my question. Whenever I look at people investing money in a company in a country like China, I got to be thinking about the threat of nationalization. What do you think?
Well, I think it's a threat that's well placed. You know, China keeps trying to improve its economy and its political institutions, but you always have to worry that is in the background.
If they decided to just nationalize the assets over there, I mean, they just basically could kick all these companies out. And of course, now the money you're talking about, I mean, a billion here and a billion there for those guys, it's more than lunch money for you and me, Joan. But for these guys, the $4 billion is a pretty good risk reward number, isn't it?
That's right.
It would seem to me that it would be. Yeah. Also, Joan, you guys, speaking of automobiles, you guys are saying that states are asking for more hybrid vehicles.
That's right. States are pushing up demand for government vehicles.
Mm-hmm. Natural gas, electricity, hydrogen fuel cells, and ethanol.
That's right.
Joan, we got to head in that direction. We can't depend on fossil fuels forever, can we?
That's right. No, there's no question about that. We really do.
Got to get something else going on here. Joan, thanks for being here. Good job today. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, Jim.
Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest entrepreneurial country in the world. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.